Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in Marion County and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA KRLS. And now with today's In-Depth, here is Dr. Bob Leonard.
A three-time Indianapolis 500 winner and National Sprint Car Hall of Fame member has been enjoying a few days in Knoxville and Pella. What are his thoughts on his career, the contemporary racing scene, and life? Let's go in depth with legendary racer Bobby Unser from Albuquerque. Well, Bobby, what brings you to Knoxville?
Well, it's the reason for coming here in this particular trip is obviously because there's a racetrack and a museum here. And they're having the induction ceremonies this weekend. So really that's what we came up for. We used to sprint car race, or I did. And it was probably for a great portion of my life. And I didn't come to Knoxville, but there's a lot of other racetracks around the United States, and I did probably 100 other racetracks. And so this is the biggest, most powerful, the best known sprint car track in the whole United States. And I've already been inducted into the Hall of Fame here many years ago. So I've really owed them a visit for a long time. A visit meaning do something constructive for them. So I'm here to help them do their induction this year. I know that all sounds complicated, but it's like the old deal. You owe somebody a favor, it's time to repay it.
Well, it's a great class of inductees this year.
Yes, it is. It always is, though. The Sprint Car Hall of Fame is, that's basically the root of racing in the United States. Midget racing and sprint car racing is basically the start of almost all of American automobile racing. And it's kind of neat that this, in a funny place now, Iowa's a long place from wherever I travel, but it's nice to come up here. The country's beautiful. That doesn't have anything to do with being here. All sprint cars. That's what it's about.
Now, how did you get your start in racing? Where did you grow up? Let's start with that.
I grew up in Albuquerque, and I wasn't born there, but practically born there, lacking a year and a half. Came from Colorado Springs, and then we started racing. That means my brothers and I, in Albuquerque, and from there on, we just went to bigger places, more racing, whatever, Arizona, California, for us in the beginning. Then, of course, to the Midwest and then to the East Coast. And before you know it, you're in Indy cars, in Indianapolis cars. And that's the road to get there in my era.
Well, and you had a great career. Your family's had a great career. Is it something that you were all born with, or you learned from each other? What do you, or both?
I think it's both. I think everybody, Bob, is born equal. My opinion is that everybody that's born with the right head on their shoulders, and I don't mean some special head, I'm talking about total average, and you got two working hands and two working feet, they can become whatever they want to become. I totally believe this, and this is in any walk of life, no matter how much in depth you want to go to any field that you might be interested in. And in our particular case, it was automobile racing, car racing. And that's what we pursued as young kids. My dad was a race driver. His two brothers, our uncles, were race drivers. One of the uncles, Uncle Joe, was killed in a race car. And then my brother Jerry was later killed in 1959 at Indianapolis. And so it wasn't totally a safe business back in those days, but it's what we wanted to do. So I don't think, a lot of people try to make a deal where you're bred into it. I believe that desire is the answer to everything. If you have enough desire, it makes no difference what you want to be. You can be that. But remember, desire is just a short word. Doesn't do much work for you if you don't utilize it. So you have to have it. Now, a lot of people ask me, well, where do you get some? You have to want something really bad. Then that is the desire. and then you will succeed. That's just the way in any walk of life, I believe.
And your brothers believed the same thing.
Absolutely. Our whole family did. My dad and his two brothers, my uncles, for example, put the first motorcycle and sidecar in history on the top of Pikes Peak before the road was ever built. Now, they had to have the desire to want to do that because certainly nobody was paying them for it. They just did it because it was a challenge, and that's what desire is all about. So they did that, but they also drove races. My one uncle, Uncle Louie, ended up winning Pikes Peak Hill Climb 9 times, and that's in the unlimited fastest cars. And that was, in a lot of ways, my motivator when I was very young. So desire again. I had the desire to want to win Pikes Peak more than anybody did. So I ended up winning it 13 times. And that was to, not that I didn't like my uncle. In fact, we were a very close family. It's just that I wanted to beat him. That was my mentor. That's what motivated me. That's where my desire, not all of it, but where a lot of it came from.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation with Bobby Unser. I remember the Great Pikes Peak races. All of America watched that. That was a really big deal, watching you win those races. All of America watched.
Well, it was the second oldest. Well, it still is today. It's the second oldest race in the United States behind Indianapolis. When I was young, I didn't dream of going to Indianapolis. I dreamed of winning Pikes Peak. So I became really, 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 really strong doing Pikes Peak. And I became very successful at it.
And what you learned at Pikes Peak helped you at Indianapolis?
Obviously, because if you learn to succeed, that's where desire comes in. If you learn to succeed, you just can't stand failures. They're going to happen. Too many failures happen, and everybody knows that. But nonetheless, you don't let that bog you down and don't dwell on them too long. Like, I've trained myself to forget about failures. When I have a bad day, it's okay right then and there. You can mope over it and feel really bad. But give me another day, I'm off doing something else. And I put that in the past, put that behind me. And I've done that all my life. And I think everybody needs to do that if they're successful. Don't mope with your failures. Let them go and be done with.
And what years did you win Indianapolis?
My first win was in 1968. The second one was in 1975. And the third one in 1981. I did it in 3 different decades, which is somewhat of a record also.
Pretty amazing. And your family has what, 10?
Nine. Should have a lot more than 10, for sure, but 9. My brother Al won 4 times. I did 3. And little Al, my nephew, won it twice. And so we all had some that we lost that we should have really had, but that's okay. The good Lord somehow or another decided that the Unser boys should go to Indianapolis, and it's become like a home to us.
Did you have favorite guys that you like to race against?
Not really. You naturally make a lot of friends. That's just the business that you're in. Very dangerous business, and it was really dangerous back in our era. We call that the golden years. 50s, 60s, 70s, along in there, were the golden years of automobile racing, and a lot of the drivers used to die in race cars, racing accidents, roughly about 50% of them. And that wasn't an acceptable number by the wildest stretch of imagination. So safety started finally getting in. So when they had innovations, new stuff, new technologies, safety came right up along with it. And that was basically created and caused by Goodyear. Tire and Rubber Company got into building tires for the race cars, which again, Pikes Peak was the first place for them. On my car, and as soon as they did that for a little bit, they got on top also, but they got into safety. Fuel cells started coming in. Breakaway fittings, so whenever you see the cars have real bad wrecks and the brake, you know, the engine tears off and whatever you might see that's really bad, when the hoses tear apart, they don't leak fuel anymore. Boy, it's caused a lot. Like my brother Jerry died from burns in 1959. And today, that would be a ho-hum deal. Not only medically, but the car would have not caught fire. The tank would have had a bladder in it. The lines would have had breakaway fittings, meaning when it breaks away, the fuel doesn't leak out. And I mean, that's all technology that's come along for racing. And of course, it found its way to the military. A lot of our innovations found its way to the American military. And some of it naturally has come back to racing, too.
So things learned on the racetrack have general applications with respect to technology.
Yes. In fact, racing will be about the highest tech sport on Earth because it is technology. You know, when you look at the wings, we'll be ahead of the best airplanes that work in the world. The technology on the aerodynamics of race cars is really ahead of airplanes. Did that many years ago. And there's so many things that we have that's high-tech. Turbocharging, the development of. We had turbocharging many, many years ago, but not to the point where it was easily usable, readily available, and adaptable to most everything. Well, now you see, you probably have a fifth or maybe sixth of the cars in the United States. All the trucks. Everything has turbochargers. It is very practical now. Well, all the practicalities from all that came from racing. The development and how to use it and how to be able to control it and make it work with you. Drivable.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation with Bobby Unser. Now, are there favorite young drivers that you like to watch now? And do they do things differently than you used to do?
Yes. Number one, the new drivers definitely do things different than we used to. Times are different. And some cases, we don't like it. But no matter what, it's still automobile racing. The cars have become relatively safe. And I can't say completely safe because drivers still do get hurt, but not very often. It's very rare to see a race driver die in accidents today. And as I told you before, half dying was never acceptable. But nonetheless, it happened. Just always assume it wasn't going to be you. But today, the race drivers have a long life. They make a lot more money than we used to make, and we're not griping about that. I certainly made more than I needed, and it's never enough, but at least it was more than I needed, and things got better as I went on down the road. But today, things are just totally different. They talk millions now instead of thousands, but it costs millions to run the cars as compared to thousands before. So the whole deal is just a whole lot better, and there's a lot of young guys that are coming along. A lot more would like to be able to get to Indianapolis, but it costs an awful lot of money, and also we're in a very bad economy now, as you well know. So a lot of the drivers, it comes kind of down to the rich daddies. Too much of that right now. The race driver that goes out and he isn't maybe really a good race driver, but he has the ability to find a sponsor. Sponsors really make up a lot of the cost of the cars today and the cost of running the cars. And so it's a different era entirely. You see very few guys except like in the sprint cars. You see guys like Kinzer. There's just many of them. You can go over to the museum and just look on the walls and see the greats that were in sprint car racing. Some of them went on to Indianapolis. Some of them tried it and failed at it. But most of all, they were all good race drivers. And they had to be in order to make it to Knoxville.
What one race, if you had one to do over, which one would you want?
Well, I just accomplished most of them. There isn't too many of them that I haven't kicked their butts and moved on down the road at. So I don't know. I mean, I won Pikes Peak 13 times. I won Indianapolis 3. I'd like to go back and get a couple of them at Indianapolis that somebody took away. Good Lord, just decided I wasn't going to win that day. But that's okay. So I don't know. I'm not the selfish type of a person to say, wow, I wished I could do it over. I wished I could do racing over. If there was a time machine, I'd be the first one in it. And I'd go back to being about 30 years of age, and I just would race all the time. And I think I could do a better job than these new guys, because hopefully I'd already know what it was like to do it.
And do you want to do it in the old cars or the new cars?
The new cars. I'm a very high-tech person. I'm also a self-taught mechanical engineer. And qualify at that. I learned from the smartest engineers in the world how to be an engineer. And I think that helped me in my racing career tremendously. I mean, honest to goodness, I used to design my own wings, my own ground effects on the cars, my own suspensions. I could do all of that. I have a drawing table that's in Albuquerque that I bought when I didn't have much money. And I learned how to do it to scale and draw things out and have them work and be able to figure them out. I mean, it's the same old thing that I said in Desire. If you want to do something, you can do it. I knew down deep that I needed to get into engineering to some degree. And so I learned how to be an engineer, learned how to be a designer. Then I would be able to design it, test it, develop it, and maybe win races with it. Lord only knows I won quite a few.
Do you think there's guys out there like that now that are engineers like that?
Unfortunately, Bob, we just don't see them like this anymore. I'm really sad about it. We'll talk about the successful drivers, the ones that do make it to Indianapolis. They really don't know much, at least most of them, about anything mechanical. Now, if you take the sprint car guys, like running here in Knoxville, some of those guys are really sharp. I mean, really sharp. But not all of them. A lot of them have become specialists. But if you take a guy like Steve Kinzer, guys like that, come on, they can do anything. They know what a tire is. They know a front from a back tire. They know what an engine, know all the pieces. They know how to set the car up. They know how to make it work good and win races. And that's how they make their living.
Now, you are speaking a lot about desire and the potential of realizing what one wants to be. And I hope a lot of kids are listening to this. And I'm suspecting now, even in retirement, you're still wanting something. You're still seeking. You're still achieving. What is it that you're still seeking to achieve?
Well, I have to. I that's one thing where I tell people I was born to do hard things. And I'm an innovator. I'm an inventor. But I don't live in a dream world. So like, for example, through racing and not stopping at midget or sprint car racing, but going on up to the really high-tech stuff, I had to learn to do that, in my opinion. So now I do a little bit of accident reconstruction. But I do some of the biggest cases in the United States, and I qualify as a mechanical engineer. Now, they don't like me on the other side, whichever side I'm on, because as I sit here today, I've never lost a case. And the cases that I do today usually go from usually somewhere around $10 million to a little over $100 million cases. And
lawsuits.
Lawsuits, yeah. Accident reconstruction. And not any particular side, whether I'm on plaintiff or defendant, it doesn't make a lot of difference. I cheat a little bit because I think I know the winning side before I start doing it. And I know that's a little unfair, but I'm able to do that. And I do it better than other people do it. I work hard at it. And I love to go to court. If I think a case, for example, isn't going to go to court, I just don't want to do it. Money is not the motivator for me. I'm probably the highest paid of this type of expert in the United States, but I don't care about that. Money, yes, I do care, but money is not the determining factor on what I do. It's winning that's the most important, and don't lie. But often there'll be an accident, and maybe it ends up being an awfully big case. And I can go in and figure out for the attorneys. Generally speaking, work for a manufacturer or an insurance company. But I can figure things out sometimes that other people can't figure out. It's what I've been taught to do for many years. And I just took what I learned in racing and what I learned from working around the engineers all the time, and I just leveraged that into, if I need money, that's what I do. But I don't do very many cases. In other words, I'm not in the business to do one a week or one a month or anything like that. Just as long as they're big, and just as long as I think that they'll go to trial. Because I like to talk to the jury and explain to them why I think that things are the way they are. This coming to Knoxville, I owe sprint car racing an awful lot. That's where I got a lot of my fame and glory, if that's what you want to call it. And the people here at Knoxville are, I mean, come on, everybody that's in motor racing in the United States of America knows there's a Knoxville, even though they haven't been here. They know the museum exists, and the racetrack has brought fame to a lot of people. If you win Knoxville, you become a famous person. And so it's a way for me to give back to a lot of the years that I spent doing it. I spent 35 years doing that. Long time.
Thanks to Bobby Unser for contributing to the program. For KNIA, KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
In Depth is available for podcast in the radio audio media player on KNIAKRLS.com. You'll find additional information, pictures, and more, or subscribe to the In Depth podcast and never miss an episode. If you have local topics you'd like to hear on In Depth, send an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's news and local information is KNIAKRLS and KNIAKRLS.com.